Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 12th of August 2012. My name is TRP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Nick from Partially Obstructed View and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about Curtains at the Landor Theatre. The Curtains is a backstage musical by the creators of Cabaret in Chicago. That's a Candor and Ebb to me, because I'm not an expert on these things. Now, Gareth, tell me something about this musical. And what you thought of it?
Well, it's a musical whodunit, really. It takes place in a theatre just before the opening of a show. They're sort of in the final stages of preparing the show. And there's a murder. An inspector who comes to investigate the murder, who happens to be a bit of a musical's buff. And the whole thing unravels basically on stage and behind the scenes as they seek, or as he seeks, to resolve the murder. It's obviously a comedy, it isn't a serious thing. So it's effectively a musical whodunit. The only other show I can think of like it was The Mystery of Edwin Drood, which was based on the Charles Dickens show. But this is for me, a much, much, much better show. I saw it the first time quite some time ago in a production of the Guildhall School of Music and Drama. I just thought it was okay. I just thought that this production, provided you sort of didn't take it too seriously, it was actually a lot better as a show. But it's also true to say that it's the production that shines probably more than the show. In this production, the Landor Theatre, which is a very small theatre, it takes place on a tiny stage where Martin Thomas has designed a space that allows them to have a kind of proscenium arch with a full curtain, allows them to be both backstage and on stage, which I think is quite ingenious. And it's just a great fun show, really. I mean, it's got masses of enthusiasm. It's got a much better score than I remembered from the first time I heard it. But it's the wit and the humour about it, and I guess the inventiveness of it that I enjoyed most. So for me, it was a very, very, very enjoyable evening. I don't know how Nick felt about it, but a treat for me.
I had a really, really good time. It is, as you say, you got to not take it too seriously. It is just a bit of, it's absolutely not kind of the most classic Candor and Ebb musical, and I didn't really come out of it thinking a great deal about the school. I would agree that the production is really the star here. I didn't come out kind of humming any of the tunes or anything, but it's really, really nicely directed and performed. I liked, as well as the fact that of the way the designers created because as you say, it does both show us certain bits of the kind of rather rubbish play within a play, and then takes us backstage a lot, as well as the design which enables that. I liked the way Robert McWhirr, the director, blocked that, because the Landor stage is on it's a kind of a thrust on two sides, a very kind of wide thrust on two sides, so that they it's blocked, so that when they're performing on stage, they're performing to kind of on the diagonal straight down, and then when they're performing backstage, they're performing towards the wider side of the audience, which is probably probably harder to describe just in words, but it's a very simple, tiny little blocking trick that, as well as the clever design, means you absolutely know which side of the stage you're looking at any time. It's funny. It's fun. I mean, some of the performances are stronger than others. I wasn't entirely sold on either of the female leads, but the story itself is the musical itself is a lot stronger in the kind of the comedy murder mystery element than it is in there's two relationships in there, and neither of them, I think, and I don't particularly think that's the fault of the production. I think it's just not, they're not particularly interesting relationships in there. They're more there because I suppose you feel like a musical should have a couple of kind of love struck or kind of couples in, you know, you've got the one new couple and you've got the couple who used to be married and still have feelings for each other. And I didn't think that was something you hugely cared about, but I think it is much stronger in the funny kind of fluffy, doesn't take itself too much seriously, murder mystery side of it.
I think it's worth mentioning some of the performances. I mean, the guy who plays the lieutenant, I thought was particularly good. He has a terrific American accent, and he really does crack the role of the lieutenant remarkably, I think, and Jeremy Leggett. He's got a very, very good voice. And the three people that impressed me most, apart from that, were people sort of a certain age, really. It was Buster Skeggs, who is absolutely, I think, great as the producer. A lady, Buster Skeggs, you know, whose many highlights for me are where she gets to sort of sing songs about what it's like to be a producer. And there's a lovely opening number, which is about the critics, which she kind of leads. And then there's Leo Andrew, who's the composer, who I think was also very good. And a guy called Brian Kennedy, who plays the British director, a bit like the producer, a sort of camp British director. And it was the older, apart from Jeremy Leggett, it was the older actors, I think, who shone in this production, you know, real old pros. Perhaps that's because it sort of suits the material, really.
He is very Roger Debris, the director character. But I think there's actually the person I was with said at the interval, I knew a radio director who was exactly like that. So I think certain stereotypes are there for a reason. I thought that it is one that, with the exception of Jeremy Leggett, who's kind of among the younger ones of the cast, it is one that the older cast members are that they do steal the show.
I mean, alongside the Union Theatre and occasionally the Finburn upstairs at the Gatehouse, I mean, the Landor is, and also occasionally the Southwark Playhouse, the Landor really is consistently good at putting on fringe musicals. Robert McWhirr, for me, is an excellent director. And I think, you know, again, they've done just a great job of putting on, I think, probably the professional debut of the show in the UK.
Yes, it is. I think it is the professional, because you said you'd seen it at Guildhall, so I guess that doesn't count as a, yeah. I think drama school productions count as amateur ones. I think it did okay on Broadway, but it didn't last very long. I think it did pretty well with the Tonys, and I think it won a couple of them. I think David Hyde Pierce was playing the lieutenant there, and he won the Tony for it, but I don't think it lasted very long. So I think that's why it was never one that kind of got the full transfer to the West End. So yeah, this is, and especially if you're sitting in the front row there, you're kind of really hoping that it's not an accident that you don't get kicked in the face from the high kicks, because I mean the choreography, which in this case is Robbie O'Reilly. I mean they always just go full on. With the choreography in the Landor, and it's a little room above a pub, and you never get—I've never gone in there and had the feeling that a cast were treating it as a little room above a pub. It's, you always get the feeling that they're treating it as if it's the Palladium stage or something. They just go full out for everything.
And this is, you know, this is West End quality for a quarter of the price. I mean, it's unmissable for me.
Absolutely. And I think, but I think it's one of those things of, I think if you did stick it on a bigger stage, this might, I mean, I'm presuming that it was on a bigger stage at Guildhall. I think it's one of those that you think, you know, this is so good in this space, but I can see where it would kind of flounder a bit if you stuck it in the West End. So I can see why it never made it there.
I think you're right. It is made for this kind of space. I mean, this isn't, I mean, you know, for people who gave us Cabaret in Chicago, I mean, this isn't Cabaret in Chicago. But what I like about Canton Ebb is that every show you go and see by them actually is completely different, because the Landor put on the transfer from Walthamstow of another Canton Ebb show, Flora the Red Menace, which is another completely different show. And then you've got this. And that's the great thing about them, I think, is they're just, you know, they didn't have a genre. They had a genre, I suppose, and it was musicals, but they didn't sort of have a subject matter like a lot of musical writers of the sort of, you know, the chorus line girl who gets to play the lead role and sort of repeat it over and over again. They were one-off people, and I love that.
And it's also probably worth mentioning that Fred Ebb did die halfway through writing it, so he does have an excuse for it maybe not being his best work.
And also the book writer.
Rupert Holmes. Yes, Rupert Holmes. The original book was Peter Stone. He's the one who died. Yes, Rupert Holmes took over for both of them. Both the lyrics and the book.
A bit spooky.
Because Fred Ebb was doing the lyrics, Peter Stone doing the book, and they both died, and Rupert Holmes filled in for both of them.
But another great night at the Landor, I think, for me. It's a theatre I'm very, very fond of, and this doesn't disappoint.
We're now going to talk about Soho Cinders, which is a new-ish, well, it's a world premiere of a musical by George Stiles and Anthony Drew, who had, it was disappointing, a disappointing production of their adaptation of A Private Function, Betty Blue Eyes, in the West End last year. Now, Nick, what did you think about this play, and tell me more, this musical, sorry.
Well, it's Soho Cinders. It kind of does what it says on the tin. It does transplant Cinderella into Old Compton Street. In fact, the set in this production is pretty much a giant street sign saying Old Compton Street. The set is by Morgan Large and the costume design, and it's basically a sort of a gay Cinderella. It's a young man called Robbie is the Cinderella figure. He's got this backstory where instead of being the girl cleaning the floors, he sort of owns this laundrette, which was left by his dead mother, but she didn't leave a will. So the ugly stepsisters, who are hoping to kind of legally take it over out from under him and chuck him out. At the same time, the kind of the actual kind of romance story is quite twisted for kind of West End musical theatre, because Robbie's actually paying his way by being a rent boy, and he's also having a relationship with a high profile mayoral candidate who is called James Prince, obviously. So it basically follows along the general lines of Cinderella, but I find it quite. It's apparently it's been knocking around for quite a long time. This is like you say a premiere, but I think it's had recordings done of the whole thing before. It's had concerts, so it's a project that Stiles and Drew have had for a long time, and I think probably the relative success of Betty Blue Eyes, yes, it kind of closed after a few months, but I think it certainly got its fans. So I think that's one of the reasons it's managed to get this staging. But it's still a much smaller scale affair, and I can kind of understand that. I mean, because although there's a huge stereotype of musical theatre being very popular with gay men, I mean, this is it does also have a very kind of mainstream audience, and this is, like I say, it's kind of quite there's touches of it that are quite edgy for kind of big West End musical. I can't imagine that people who saw Betty Blue Eyes would necessarily think that the next thing that, you know, they'd go and see a musical about a rent boy. There's some nice little touches back to both the Cinderella story and the kind of the pantos of Cinderella. You've got Buttons is replaced by Velcro, who's a girl played by Amy Lennox. She's very good. I mean, as will always happen, the ugly sisters steal the show. It's Susie Child and Beverly Rudd. Here the joke is very much that they're kind of reality wannabes. They want their 15 minutes of fame, and they're absolutely the highlight every time they come on stage. Michael Xavier plays the Prince Charming character, and his character I had some issues with. I think the story, with the way the story's been developed into, there's certain things that don't really hold together, and there's some awkward He's quite hard to sympathise with, especially because you've got Jenna Russell playing his fiancée, and she's absolutely excellent. And you kind of really feel for her being being cheated on by this mayoral candidate she's engaged to. So I'm not sure we ever really got behind the main relationship. I thought that Tom Milner, who plays Robbie, was a bit out of his depth vocally. I think any time he had a duet, you could very clearly notice that he was completely drowned out by everybody else. But overall, I mean, I saw this in previews, and I really enjoyed it. I thought the songs were very catchy. I think it's well worth seeing. It's kind of got a nice mix of kind of this fluffiness with the kind of edge to it, which I can see it. I can't see it becoming getting a huge West End transfer, because, you know, if something kind of as crowd pleasing as Betty Blue Eyes didn't last that long, then this is a bit more niche. But there's a lot about it that's very strong. I think there's certain story points about it that do falter a bit, but overall I found it a lot of fun and just really good songs.
Gareth, what did you think?
Well, I was a huge fan of Betty Blue Eyes. I mean, I saw it a couple of times and absolutely loved it, and was just astonished that it really never found its audience. I think Stiles and Drew are one of the best things to come out of musical theatre in the last 10 or so years. I mean, their first show, Honk, at the National Theatre, was a surprise Olivier Award winner. And they went on to do other things as well. I'm trying to think what the second big musical was now, and I can't. But I think this is terrific. I mean, on its terms, I mean, it is a musical comedy. It is quite sort of risque and at times quite gross, i.e. the sisters. It fits the Soho Theatre like a glove because it happens to be in and about Soho, and it happens to be the right size of space for this sort of show. And it is it's a very good pop sort of score, really. I mean, I really want to hear the music again, because I was kind of very, you know, I was really pleasantly surprised by some of the songs, thinking, hey, wow, this is really, you know, this is really quite an impressive score. I think the reason it wasn't mounted before now is because as they were writing it, they were asked to provide extra songs for Mary Poppins. And having done that, they were then asked by Cameron McIntosh to do Betty Blue Eyes. So it was kind of circumstance where they kept sort of pushing it to one side. And they put it on as a one-off charity concert last year, and it went down like a storm. And that was the impetus that that brought about this production. I think they're right to put it on in the Soho Theatre. I'm not sure it will. It would fit a big West End stage, and I'm not sure, as Nick says, it would find a West End audience, because there are lots of things both about the subject matter and the treatment of it that a lot of people wouldn't like. I mean, there were people sitting close to me, older Americans, who were just frankly outraged by it. And I think a lot of people would fall into that, or musical lovers would kind of fall into that category, really. But I think it's a lovely show, and it's got a great, great set of performances. You know, Jenna Russell is just lovely. She is a bit underused, to be honest, because, you know, it's not a big part for Jenna, but she's just terrific. Michael Xavier, I think, fits the sort of fits the part like a glove, really. I actually thought Tom Milner was very impressive, because it was his stage debut. You know, he's done lots of TV, apparently, not that I've seen him, but he's done lots of TV, and this was actually the first time he's done something on stage, and I thought he had a lovely voice, and where he won out, really, was just bucket loads of charm. And I agree that Amy Lennox was just great as the sort of the Buttons character. And the sisters, I mean, Beverly Rudd and Susie Chard just completely steal the show. But you're laughing with them, you know, you're not laughing at them, you're laughing with them. And they, you know, as kind of they're strip club owners, and there are parts where you kind of, you know, where it is really quite gross and vulgar, but you have to love it. You have to love them, and you have to love it. One thing we haven't mentioned is the show has a narrator, and I think that's quite clever, because it enables the story to zip along, really. And the narrator is recorded, and it's Stephen Fry. And he's got some sort of very funny narrator lines, really. So I just thought it was just an awful lot of fun. I just laughed a lot. I smiled throughout most of it. And I probably, I think we'll go again before the end of the run, just in case it doesn't go anywhere else. Because it was just another cracking night out, really. Great fun.
We're now going to talk about a couple of shows at the Finborough Theatre. Both of these shows have actually now closed, but one of them is going into the West End. But not actually the one I thought it would be doing. The show that isn't going into the West End is a piece called Fear of Breathing, which is subtitled Stories from the Syrian Revolution. This is a collection of, dramatised interviews which were conducted by journalists Ruth Sherlock, Paul Wood and Zoe Lafferty, and have been edited by Zoe Lafferty, who has also directed this production, into a moving and powerful piece of theatre. It's essentially people talking about the Syrian Revolution. We get from the very early days of the crisis of the movement, where people are very hopeful, but we then go into the as things get cracked down and there's more and more fighting, and positions get rather more polarized. They have tried to keep it well balanced. I mean, often in these things we get just the good people, and I think in this circumstance we are seeing good people, but we do sometimes see people but also there's this idea that we don't get both sides of the picture. We are a lot of the time we pick the sort of the people who want freedom and democracy and to get out from underneath this authoritarian regime. They are seen as the good guys and everything they do is good, and we really only talk to the people who want all the things that we regard as nice, like freedom and equality and all that, but they were not talking to the people who basically want to kill anyone who's Christian or Alawite, and there are a significant number of people in there, and there are actually fears right now that they are slowly taking over the revolution, and it could be really unpleasant if people go. But we see the people who are against the regime and want the kind of things that the West wants, I think is one way of putting it. Against that, we get one or two people who are supporting of the main regime and are, but they're sort of, again, they are the nice people. They're not the people carrying out sort of genocidal murders. They are people like a hotel owner who just wants to have people visiting his hotel, thinks is worried about the terrorism and all the nasty things that can happen, but is basically in support of the regime because he fears the sort of the nasty people on the revolutionary side. We get other revolutionaries like an activist who is trying to record everything. We get a rather bubbly female DJ who is very enthusiastic about things, and things happen. But it's a very good piece and a very well put together. And I was a little bit surprised that this hasn't been sort of picked up by somebody. Maybe it will be later, because it has been very well reviewed. And Nick, what did you think about this?
Yeah, I think maybe it's more the fact that it's not as obviously commercial to have a piece of very very overtly political theatre. It doesn't kind of scream West End to me, but no, it does what it does very well. I pretty much agree with everything you said about it, and I do. I like the fact that although it is mostly, as you say, it goes for the good guys as we would perceive them, you do get this recurring appearance by the actually very lovable kind of hotel owner who's played by David Broughton Davies. Yeah, just this kind of very bubbly character who, but he's okay as he is in the regime. So he's kind of, it's interesting that you don't get kind of the representative of people who want the regime to be the kind of the bloodthirsty bad guys you would normally expect, because obviously that, you know, it's pretty obvious whose side the play's on. But it's interesting that you do get a bit of a sympathetic look at the other side as well. But yeah, I as a piece of kind of verbatim theatre, it works very well. I think it's a very well put together piece, and it kind of, you know, it tells you, it gives you a lot of information in an entertaining way. It doesn't kind of except at the very end it suddenly becomes a bit preachy, but aside from that it doesn't kind of preach at you. And generally, I thought it's a very good example of the genre.
We'll now move on to the show that is transferring into the Trafalgar Studios 2. This is Incident at the Border by Kieran Lynn, and is directed by Bruce Guthrie. This is a rather odd play. At first, I thought it was almost a sketch. It has to be said. It feels that I was a little bit worried that they couldn't sustain it. The idea of this is that the couple in a park one afternoon are sort of canoodling, and then a kind of security guard, border guard, suddenly comes along and paints or uses a bit of tape to mark the new border of the a country. They are we get the idea early on that this country is sort of splitting into two, and he suddenly draws tape over a park bench where they're sitting, and actually because they're sitting on either side of the park bench, they're now technically in different countries, and they're not allowed to cross. I didn't think they could sustain this, but actually it sustains really quite well, I thought, and it's rather funny. It's not a particularly long play, and it's but it does keep it going and just keep interest. I mean, politically, I thought that this is the kind of thing that they would almost the first time you try to draw up a border, it's one of the first things you would deal with is people who get stuck on the wrong side of it. You know, obviously you would have it's the sort of thing that somebody is going to bring up at some time, but this is an idea that nobody has brought up this possibility, and nobody has worked out what to do about it, and you get this idea of it becomes increasingly fractious, especially as the tensions build between the two countries, and people get much more militarized, and it suddenly becomes this kind of military problem where they really can't cross this notional border. I mean, it is literally a piece of tape on the ground. You can't step over it without any problems. You can push past the rather officious and slightly stupid border guard, but they don't. And they're playing with the reasons of why they don't. Actually, it makes this, I thought, quite a good play, because they don't, because you actually believe it. As long as you take the point that that somebody, that a normal regime would splitting into two would work out, what to do with the people caught on the wrong side of the border. It wouldn't actually be a problem in reality. And so this is a nice piece of absurdism. What if they are completely incompetent and stupid? It seemed odd, but I didn't think it would work, and it did. What did you think about this, Nick?
I thought this was brilliant. I mean, I thought yes, definitely absurdism is the first thing that comes to mind, and I actually kind of had to the idea for an absurdist play where two people are just standing around minding their business, and then the government suddenly decides that they're in two different countries is so kind of simple. I kind of had to take in trust that that Neil McPherson and everybody at the Finborough knows their absurdist theatre better than I do, and actually it isn't an existing premise, and it is a new play, not a ripoff of an old one. Because I would have thought, God, why is that not being done before? It's such a simple, clever premise. It's another thing I'm not an expert on is the two Germanys during the time of the Berlin Wall. But I'm sure, you know, I'm sure I've heard stories of, obviously not done in this way, but of you know, fairly arbitrarily, you know, you wake up one morning and you're in the communist bloc or you're in the Western bloc. So I think there is, obviously not to the levels of comedy that it's played for here, but I think there is precedent that makes it that I can, same as with the bureaucracy, which is kind of, I described this as being somewhere between Ionesco and Kafka, because it's an absurdist thing that devolves into this incredible bureaucracy that is really what's stopping anything from happening. And I just thought it was an absolutely fantastic piece. My one surprise about it transferring is that it is so short. I've had a look, although obviously I've already been to see it, but I checked and it looks like they're charging just £20 throughout for all seats at Trafalgar 2, which is more than you'd pay on the fringe, but is at least cheaper than Trafalgar 2 usually try to get away with. But I wonder whether people will come away feeling shortchanged in terms of running time. They certainly won't come away shortchanged in terms of quality. I really just got dragged into this. And yes, as you say, it shouldn't really work for that for an hour. It should be a 5-minute sketch, but it does manage to work, and it's. And it's because I think in the best traditions of kind of absurdist theatre, it's every further step of the extreme kind of makes sense in the context of what's just happened before. You kind of start with a ludicrous premise and then just keep going further and further. And I love this. There's so many kind of ideas in there. There's so much kind of politics that it deals with. It deals with. It keeps coming back to the thing of, because when you first see them, they're this young couple who are just sitting on a park bench feeding the ducks, and the girl's kind of looking at the newspaper and kind of casually goes, "Oh, apparently we split into two countries." "Oh, well, really, have we?" So it's kind of it starts off with this theme of people not really taking an interest in huge events until they affect them personally, and that sticks around there. But as with everything else, that it's just done very discreetly, and it lets you kind of make your own connections about it, and just doesn't take itself seriously. It's just an hour and a bit of just really funny. Situations of really funny performances, the thing that's very enjoyable about it is also the fact that it then takes this huge political landscape and twists it into becoming a story about the couple's little relationship spats, because it kind of puts a pressure on their relationship, and that's just it's just so good at adding little levels of the absurd on top of each other. So well performed. I was just really recommended.
Yeah, I mean, I really quite like that idea of the you know, that you get to see the couple's relationship, and you know what is holding them together about this. You know, you sometimes think that they're just not going, you know, they really are, you know, in many ways incompatible, and they're kind of coming to realize this, but they still hold on, you know, hold a need for each other. Yeah, I mean, the we should point out that I think I'll name names. Mark Pickering plays the border guard, and Tom Bennett and Florence Hall play the couple, and they are, as you say, very very funny. And it's also, I think that what I found was slightly odd was because it's all done in sort of a British accent. You know, it's not, they're not trying to be foreign, so it's almost as if it's a sort of a very British thing going on. But it's not. I mean, obviously, all the parallels are the foreign parallels. I think the most recent one where this sort of thing happened was the Czech Republic and Slovakia when they split apart. But I don't think, you know, there's, and they of course have a, you know, they have a long history of sort of slightly absurdist theatre with their former president Václav Havel. You can find at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as-yet-unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are ayu-londontheatre.org, and the podcast can also be found on iTunes, where you can leave a review.